Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
Hello, 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 and welcome to another edition of the Niner Noise Podcast, parts of the Fansided Podcast Network. My name is Robert Morrison, a contributor at NinerNoise.com, and here with me, as always, is fellow contributor and podcast co-host that he is, Mr. Akshaz Divadula. Akshaz, the draft is over, and we're going to get into all that, but first of all, the all-important question, how are you doing?
Yeah, Robert, I'm doing good. The draft was over. If you didn't get a chance to see our video or live stream, I think there should be something up of it now. The whole Niner Noise crew got together and watched the first round. It was great. Lots of banter, lots of good conversation. So yeah, had a great time.
It was, including several two members of our crew who are on different part in different time zones completely. We have a contributor who's in England and a contributor Jeremy Wolford, who was with us last time, who's in Australia. So they were in two completely different worlds. I think what did John said it was like 3 a.m. or something like that when the draft started in England or something like that, and he stuck with us through the whole whatever 3.5 hour hours it was until the Niners pick. And then we were messing with him towards the end. I was like, wouldn't it be funny if they just traded out of the first round? It would not have been funny, but it also would have been kind of funny. Fortunately, they did not trade out of the first round, and so that ended up working out for him. So first thing I want to say right off the bat is that all the three of us, you, Jeremy, and I, all said, I set the over-under at 7.5 players being picked, and we missed it by that much, right? We all picked the under. You were, like, significantly, you said significantly under 7.5 picks. They ended up getting 8, which was more than I expected. But I guess that's just sort of how the way, I mean, like, you can only get rid of draft picks if people are willing to take them from you, and they're willing to give you solid contributions and the trade and all that kind of stuff. So I guess you got to do what you got to do. It's hard to get out of draft picks if there's no opportunities to actually make the trade. So 8 players, we'll go through them in a little bit. But generally speaking, were you surprised by how the draft shook out from a 49ers perspective?
Yeah, I mean, I think I am for a couple of reasons. We'll talk about the players they selected, but I thought there were some areas of need that they didn't really address. And I thought they just weren't as aggressive as I think we all thought they would be. I, now looking back on it, definitely put a little too much clickbait in a title that said, "Did John Lynch give away the 49ers draft plan?" Where I laid out that all of his comments meant the 49ers would trade up aggressively within the first few rounds to get their guys and end up with a rather small draft class. They didn't do that. They really didn't do that. But, I think we'll talk about the players in general. And I think, the Niners are a fantastic team. They are probably the best roster in the NFL. Finally, with the quarterback that keeps them in that conversation, you don't have to say outside of QB anymore when it comes to the 49ers. But, there's not a ton you can add to this team, which made me think that they would have taken a very present focus, like, all right, we probably need a corner and we need an offensive tackle and maybe a wide receiver to slot in at the slot. And let's get those guys and we'll figure it out from there. But they kind of went the opposite way. You know, they took a look at some forward-looking picks, and it's a tough balance every time you're balancing the future and the present. So I would say the 49ers definitely lean towards the future in this draft.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're in the sort of roster position that they are, and we've talked already throughout the first couple of months of this offseason, I'm sure we'll say this ad nauseum throughout the summer and as the season gets started, like, this is the strike while the iron is hot time. This is the last opportunity where your quarterback is cheap and you can just surround him with all the all pro talent that you want. And then, you know, after this year, no matter what happens, if they win the Super Bowl, if they don't win the Super Bowl, if whatever happens, those are the two options, really. You can either win it or not, right? I guess there are other things in between. But, yeah, like the things are going to start coming apart a little bit. Like, the conversation's already happening about, you know, what's the long-term future of Deebo Samuel? Is Deebo Samuel next year's Eric Armstead in terms of, like, he's the cap casualty guy? All those conversations that we'll be having for the rest of the year. But I think, you know, before we get to this point next year, I think we'll be having that conversation a lot. But I think you're right. I think a lot of the picks that they made are guys that they think could have some role in 2024, but are certainly guys that by the time 2025 rolls around, that these are players that they anticipate are going to be able to step into positions that they might be losing guys in. I think that you can point to a lot of the draft class and say, well, this guy could be replacing this person in 2025 when they have a pretty sizable free agent list that will need to be covered, and they're not gonna be able to pay all those guys. And it's not only the big name guys. It's not guys like whether or not they're gonna be able to keep Deebo Samuel or whether or not George Kittle is gonna need to be able to take a pay cut next year. It's even like keeping a guy like Aaron Banks around. Like, is that going to be financially feasible if Brock Purdy continues to progress and they have to pay him $40, $45 million a year over the course of the next five or six seasons? Certain guys are going to have to, you know, get cut and move on to other places. And at that point, the team's going to be really dependent on younger players. But for right now, that's not something they have to worry about. Now, that doesn't mean that some of these guys, as we'll talk about in a little bit, won't be able to contribute in 2024. But as you said, these are players that are future thinking picks as much as anything else.
Cool. So, Robert, you mentioned that that the Niners didn't really get a chance to trade out of this draft, and, you know, that it takes two to tango in a deal. But I want to point out that the Philadelphia Eagles, I think, ended up getting like seven or so picks the 2025 draft out of this draft. So the opportunities were there, which is what makes it really interesting, because that can probably hold eight rookies. If they do, this might be the greatest rookie class ever. Let's be honest. Yeah,
for true.
All eight rookies to make this roster. So I'm really interested in how, you know, the offseason training and training camp and the preseason games are going to work out, because we have a lot of players here who I didn't think would be drafted by this team, just because it's a real question of who they're replacing, but they're here now. So once you get into building, one thing the 49ers do that I've always liked, and I think it's a very difficult decision to make, but once you're able to make it, you can build a team so much better. Is once you get into the building, we don't care anymore about like when you were drafted. You're just a player, and you're going to have to play to earn your stuff. You know, they did that with quarterback. They've done that at every position. And I think that's what makes it really intriguing, is because they obviously thought there were eight guys in this draft, plus the undrafted free agents, potentially, who have a chance to make this roster. So now it'll be interesting to see how many of those guys actually crack the 53.
Yeah, for sure. And just for intrigue, we mentioned John Porter, who's our resident English fellow, who was 3 a.m. in the draft or whatever time it was. He did an inaugural 53-man roster projection based on the class. So go ahead and take a look at that. That's on Niner Noise, and kind of just see what he thinks about that. But we're gonna let's get into the class a little bit. We're also gonna talk about, as you alluded to, the undrafted free agents. We don't have an official group from the team, but we do know that there have been a lot of reports about players that are definitely coming. There's been some players that have said specifically, like, hey, I got drafted there, or I got signed. There's some that are still reported. We did some investigating, and it looks like the Niners announced their undrafted free agent list on May 2nd last year. So we're anticipating we should see that list sometime in the next couple of days. But as of now, the only thing we know for sure is we got eight rookies, and then there's you know, another group that's going to bring the list to 90. So let's start off with the first round pick. So we waited for a very long time during our live stream, and we had a good time just kind of chatting about different things and reacting to different picks. And Jeremy was having a cow with crazy things that happened. And he was just getting very upset or very excited about different things. He was cracking me up. We had some weird things going on with like people being at different parts of like broadcasts were a little bit ahead of other things. And so we were trying to figure out how to time it and everything. But the Niners did eventually stay at 31 after kind of a strange first round. It was what, 14 straight offensive players? I think 13 or 14, I think, straight offensive players that were taken. It was the longest such stretch in the history of the NFL draft. I believe 7 offensive players was the previous record. So this like smashed it. On top of that, I think there were 23 offensive players taken in the first round altogether. It's just an absolutely insane number. That's also an all-time high. I believe 19 was the original the original high just from a couple of years ago. But the Niners contributed to that with their selection of wide receiver Ricky Pearsall out of Florida. I'm going to be honest with you, Akshaz. I did not know who Ricky Pearsall was before the 49ers drafted him. Wasn't on my radar. He didn't come up during our conversation with Jeremy last week leading up to the draft. But the more that I've kind of seen about him, he seems like a real good fit. And maybe it's a little bit of a stretch or a reach in the first round. But as we were talking about during our live stream, if you get the benefit of that potential to keep him around for 5 years without having to worry about, the contract extensions and all that kind of stuff, You take that opportunity if you like the guy. But I don't know. I mean, I get that he wasn't projected to be a first round talent, and maybe there was maybe they got him a little earlier than most people anticipated. But the buzz around him seems pretty high, and he seems to have a lot of skills that are going to really translate quite well in this offense. And I don't know. I don't know if he's going to have a massive role next year. Maybe he's wide receiver 4. Or, you know, him and Juwan Jennings are 3 and 4 kind of collectively, depending on the need. But it's going to allow the Niners to open up the offense in a different way that they haven't really done, because they haven't had a fourth wide receiver worth anything over the last couple of seasons. And if he can be impactful in any way, shape, or form as a rookie, then, man, that's going to be massive.
You know, Robert, I'm convinced that if Xavier Worthy fell at 31, the Niners would have drafted him. So I would have to say this. We were so close. I was so excited.
I know, we were getting pumped.
Yeah, I was ready, and then the Chiefs swooped in. But I totally agree. You know, I think the thing about Pearsall and when he was taken, and I saw a good point about this, I think it was from Akash Ankabarthan on Twitter. With the run on wide receivers in the second round, you don't really know when your guy is going to be taken. And the reality is, if I can allow myself the delusion of thinking that the Niners thought Xavier Worthy was better, even though there's no reason that they did or didn't think that, then you have a situation where the Niners probably had the top 3 receivers on their own, like, stratosphere, different level. You're not getting those guys unless you trade one of Ayuk or Samuel. And then from there you go, you probably have Worthy and maybe Pearsall on like one string, and then you have the other receivers below. And, you know, it's easy for people to say, oh, you know, they should have traded back, they still would have got him. But if you evaluated your guy as better than the other options, then you should take your guy. I think that's where probably the public perception of Ricky Pearsall and the Niners' perception differ, is that I don't think most people taking a quick peek at the draft really thought that Ricky Pearsall was better than Adonai Mitchell or Xavier Leggett or Ladd McConkley, Keon Coleman, any of these guys that got drafted right after him. But if the Niners thought that, then you get the fifth-year option, you get another year of cost-controlled play, and, you know, you get the guy who you wanted out of that group. So I think it's a smart pick in that way. Time will tell about what Pearsall can bring to the table. I agree. He seems to be a very talented receiver in a lot of different facets. And the biggest thing is he can get open. Like, route running, off the charts, great hands, and play all the different positions that the Niners need. A little undersized, but very much like Brandon Ayuk. Just seems like a smooth player overall. So he adds a similar element to this office and offense, I'd say, compared to Ayuk. But I don't think – no one read that as like, oh, my God, they're going to trade Brandon now or not re-sign him. I think he's just – he's a good football player, and he offers a – you know, another option for the Niners to take into the passing game, like you mentioned.
Yeah, that was driving me crazy. Like, the immediate response was, oh, they drafted a wide receiver. That means Ayuk and or Samuel are gone. It's like, no, I mean, no, not necessarily. Like, we don't have to do that. Like, we talked about this before. Like, Brandon Ayuk could theoretically play on the fifth-year option this year. And that's a relatively, I mean, it's not a cheap, cheap deal, but it's relatively cheap compared to what they're going to have to pay him if they sign him to an extension. And Deebo Samuel's contract is what it is at this point. And then Ricky Pearsall will be on his rookie deal. So, and then Juwan Jennings is going to make like, what, $3 million or something like that. It's a relatively inexpensive. I mean, it's an expensive receiver room, but not relative to some other groups. Like, it's right in there in terms of like a high end quality, well-paid receiver group. And there's just no reason this means that, oh, you got to get rid of one of them. Now, could it mean that they're planning for life without one of them next year? Definitely, more than likely. I think that's certainly in play. Like, they want to make sure that Pearsall gets in here, he gets a year under his belt, kind of set expectations fairly low. Like, if he has, you know, 20, 30 catches this year as a rookie, that would be, you know, high. Maybe that's what they're anticipating. Like, he gets into the offense, he contributes. Maybe he's not expected to be like the guy, but then as he grows, he adds something else to the offense. He fills in things. He does have some experience doing some Deebo Samuel-like stuff. He does have some rushing attempts. He has return punts, which is another thing that he might be able to do. But he's just a good twitchy athlete. He's got pretty good speed, especially in play speed. And he just looks. I think I saw he had 4 drops last season. Or over the last 2 years, I think, at Florida, which is just outrageous. So he's got good hands, good solid hands. Consequently, that clip of that's been going around for like the catch of the year, that one-handed play that he made. Do you happen to know who that was against, Akshaz? Do you remember?
I'm gonna guess it's this. I forgot his name, but it's our second year, our second round pick. It has to.
Oh, no. It was the Charlotte football team, which is one of the schools that I have attended in my time.
Oh.
As a student. So, Charlotte went to Florida, it's and I think they got. Yeah. One of my alma maters. And they, I don't think, as I recall, the game did not go particularly well. But that's what happens when a Conference USA team goes to the ACC or SEC and gets kind of destroyed. But speaking of the aforementioned player, although that you were alluding to, I believe they do have some experience against each other with Florida State and Florida. 49ers second round pick, which came at pick 64 in the draft. They didn't move. They did end up moving back. So they were at 63. They moved back to 64. The Chiefs took a guy that they probably weren't going to take in the first place. And the Niners ended up selecting cornerback Renardo Green out of Florida State. Green led Florida State with 13 pass breakups in 2023, according to the 49ers website. And I checked that information earlier, so I know that to be true as well. Kind of not a really tall guy. I think he's like 6 feet. But pretty lean, and he just seems to have a nose for the ball. Not a lot of interceptions, but is getting in there and, you know, breaking up passes and all that kind of stuff. And then the other thing, one thing that we didn't mention with Pearsall is that he has got some experience playing in multiple positions at wide receiver. Renardo Green, similar kind of thing, where he's played inside and outside. So he could be a guy that maybe he doesn't do this in 2024, but on down the road, he's a kind of a multiple player type of guy. But I think like the best case scenario here is that he's ready to go year one, and maybe he can step into that slot position, or he can be the guy that steps into whatever Ambry Thomas was trying to do last year, and allows Diamondor Lenore to move in inside. Cause I think there's certainly an indication based on the selection of Green and the free agency signings at the cornerback position that the 49ers are not satisfied with the group that they had last year outside of Ward and Charius Ward and D'Amador Lenore. So I think this is another good addition. He seems like a steady presence at the cornerback position.
Absolutely. And I'm going to so first of all, Renato, I'm sorry if you're listening. I'm sorry for forgetting your name. I think this is a place where we're talking about, I was talking about the lack of aggressiveness from the 49ers that I think just kind of defined their approach for the draft, because both Cooper DeJean and Kool-Aid McKinstry were falling to the 40s. And, you know, you got to the early 40s, late 30s, and there was a lot of first-round caliber cornerbacks out there. And the 49ers chose not to make a move up for him, while other teams did actually get aggressive in trying to get one of those guys. I think, you know, that's not fair to, compare those guys to Renardo Green, but I do think that's a comparison that has to be made, because the 49ers did make a choice that they take Renardo at 64th as opposed to giving up maybe their third, maybe their fourth, in order to move up and get one of these quote-unquote first-round corners. But I agree with you. Renardo seems like a great player. He seems very steady. He's aggressive. He plays a lot of press man, which seems to be something the 49ers are going to lean more into next year. So he seems like a really good fit for this defense in particular, which is really important when it comes to cornerbacks that aren't, you know, the elite of the elite. Not saying that Renardo can't become one of those upper echelon cornerbacks. In fact, please do. That would be incredible. I would have no complaints. No. Renardo Green was an all-pro cornerback. I don't think anyone in 49ers land would. But, you know, it was a weird second-round pick overall, because you got the sense that there were a couple offensive tackles the Niners really liked that went right before him. You know, the Chiefs selected a tackle that, you're right, I don't think the Niners probably wanted to take him, but the Ravens might have selected someone the 49ers wanted right before an offensive tackle, I think, Rosengarten out of Washington State. And it's an interesting situation, because I think absent the player, it reads as though the 49ers kind of let the draft fall to them in this spot and took whoever they liked out of their group. But That says nothing upon Renardo Green, who I think is going to be an exceptional corner, probably not going to start next year, I don't think. It seems like the Niners feel very comfortable with Demo, Mooney Ward, and Isaac Yiadom being that core three, with a lot of competition outside of those guys. But definitely after this year, when basically every corner on the 49ers except Renardo Green will be up for a contract, I think you'll expect him to get some big minutes.
Yeah, it'll be. I mean, this is going to be a really important year for the depth pieces of that defensive backfield, particularly the cornerbacks, because as you mentioned, Travarius Ward and D'Amato Lenore might be two other guys that are going to be casualties of not the cap casualties necessarily, but just guys that they can't afford to bring back, because hopefully Brock Purdy proves himself to continue to be the guy at the quarterback position, and they have to pay him. So it's a good problem. We're talking about a potentially good problem to have. If Brock Purdy continues to be the guy that he's been over the last year and a half, and we're like, okay, well, this guy is the quarterback that's going to be here for hopefully the next decade, then this is a problem that you want to have, right? This is the goal. But that will means that the young guy's got to step up. So another young guy that will be, I think, part of the mix at the offensive line, and maybe, again, another guy that they're looking at as a long-term solution, and that is Dominic Pooney. He was taken in the third round with the 86th overall pick out of Kansas. Kansas, man, is all of a sudden a football school, and it's weird to me. He was the first team all Big 12 conference. Started at left tackle, actually, for Kansas, although I think the expectation is that the 49ers see him more as an interior guy. That doesn't mean that he couldn't be a tackle of the future. He could be somebody who steps in as maybe somebody who pushes Colton McKivitz. It could be, as the theme of this particular podcast, forward thinking, what happens when Trent Williams retires in maybe a year or two. Maybe Dominic Pooney is the type of guy that can step in. I don't know. But he's certainly got experience on the outside and some opportunities to potentially be an interior offensive lineman as well. So interesting to see how that goes, but this has been a kind of a strange position. They tend to get in over the last couple of years, it seems like they've taken a bunch of these sort of middle round offensive linemen, and it's not always worked out, at least not super successfully. But this seems like, again, another forward thinking position, that this is a guy who hopefully, you know, he makes the team. Maybe he's your swing tackle, or he's your swing like utility guy, or whatever it is that he wants to do. And then similar to like an Aaron Banks type of situation where he's there, and then in 2025 he's ready to step in to take over as a starting role somewhere. I don't know. I kind of see that how this is going to roll out, because it doesn't seem like they're terribly worried about their starting group at this particular point.
Yeah. So I think the interesting thing about Dominic Pooney is that he's really going to be a question of like present versus future for the 49ers, because from my reading up on him, he's a guard who played tackle. He has the size for tackle, but his skills scream guard. And I saw even some discussion that maybe he could play center, which would be very, very intriguing for the 49ers. But it's questionable, because I really think the Niners could toss him out at right guard and he'd probably give him high-level play and starter-level play. But they could also toss him as a swing tackle, bench tackle, kind of go from there, and hopefully next year take over a starting spot. We hope not on the left side. We hope on the right side, because that would mean that Trent's still around. But
yeah,
I don't know. Like you mentioned, they've taken a lot of swings at these like tweener tackles. Probably better for guard than tackle. But they really haven't let those guys transition inside. I think when Jalen Moore got drafted, he screamed, "I'm going to be a guard." And the Niners and like thought of him as such, but need, circumstance, whatever, they just never gave him that chance. And I think, you know, Moore's been a serviceable swing tackle, but it's almost been a disservice to him to keep him on the outside rather than let him really fight for an interior spot. So I think personally, I would probably prefer the Niners let Pooney play guard and kind of see how he can play there. And, you know, address tackle next year, really address it, whether that means you put yourself in a box, essentially, and draft a starting tackle in the first round, no matter what, next year, or trade for someone. I feel like that's the right way to go. But I don't know. I could definitely just be completely wrong on this, and Pooney ends up being a starting tackle for the next decade plus.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of it depends on other things. Like, if Aaron Banks is willing to come back and doesn't command like a bunch of money, and, you know, he's willing to work with the team and they don't have that hole on the left side. And if Trent Williams says he's going to stick around for another year or two past 2024, you know, things like that. If there are obvious circumstances that are blocking him out, like, okay, the left side's taken care of. Maybe they find their center somewhere else, and the right side, I mean, it seems like John Feliciano is kind of one and done next year based on his circumstances that he's put out. And then who knows with Colton McKivitz. I mean, if someone beats him out, I don't think that they're going to like be like, "Oh, well, we got Colton McKivitz, the right tackle. You can't be the right tackle." So that'll be certainly a fluid situation. Maybe not this year, but certainly over the heading into next offseason. With their fourth round pick. So the Niners are 1, 2, 3, 4. They're making picks, and then it dries up and it gets weird. they took safety out of Wake Forest, Malik Mustafa. Fourth round, 124th pick. Mustafa seems to be like the perfect complement to Talanoa Hufanga in a lot of ways. Very much a tackling machine. 175 tackles over 35 games, including 15 tackles for loss. He actually had 4 sacks as well during his career. 3 interceptions and 20 passes defended. 4 forced fumbles and 2 fumble recoveries. As a member of the Demon Deacon secondary, he's not a big, massive guy. He's a little on the smaller side again, but he just seems like a very sure-handed tackler, which will make him an essential like special teamer, which is 100% what his role is going to be in 2024. Unless some slowdown on Hufanga's injury, but again, we're going to keep repeating this. Talanoa Hufanga is a restricted free agent after this season. And again, they can't pay everybody. So I think another forward thinking, like, let's see what he's got. Let him learn a little bit. Maybe he gets some opportunities, just like Jair Brown did last year, where he had to step in and all of a sudden a lot was asked of him. And I think for the most part, Brown acquitted himself quite well and stands to be a starting safety in this defense going into next season. And so maybe the future is Malik Mustafa and Jair Brown. I don't know. But this is, again, another one of those, like, he'll have something to do in 2024. It may not be a major impactful role, but he'll have a role. And then in 2025, maybe he's the starter. But he looks like an interesting guy. Maybe somebody you're going to have to, like tweak a little bit to make sure that he's not, like, overcommitting into the tackle all so much. And but as far as, like, go and get the ball carrier, I don't think you're going to have to tell him twice.
Not at all. I think he kind of hit the nail on the head for what I was thinking about the pick. He seems ready-made to step in when Hufanga leaves the 49ers. And, you know, I'm willing to say if Hufanga gets back to playing the level he's capable of playing, I'll be very surprised if the 49ers re-sign him. This is not a position they particularly value at a high level salary-wise. So that seems like a place where they throw in Mustafa. And for all the reasons you mentioned, I think we'll see him on the field for sure. Special teams, definitely. Potentially some different safety looks. He's a gamer. And one thing that I've realized with the way the 49ers draft, you can't go wrong with the way they draft gamers.
Yep. One thing that they also seem to focus on a lot is just getting more athletic and faster. I think there were some lessons that they learned from particularly the NFC Championship game and the Super Bowl. And that's obviously from the Lions. They learned the absolute power of speed. And from the Chiefs, they learned the power of what happens when your wide receivers can't get open on their own. So hence the Ricky Pearsall selection, and then hence the next two selections that they made in the fourth round, just five picks apart from one another. First of all, we had the annual Kyle Shanahan mid-round running back selection because he can't help himself for some odd reason. Now this guy's a little bit different. He's drafted, you know, high college production guys, not real toolsy players, but they've just been like, they've gotten the job done at the college level, you know, think like Trey Sermon. But this guy, Isaac Guarnerendo, there we go, is out of Louisville, is an interesting cat. He wasn't particularly productive during his college career, but as an athlete, he is just like absolutely off the charts. Very fast, very twitchy, good with the ball in his hands. From what I can tell, seems to have a little bit of like, this is going to be really high praise, and I don't mean this like he is like the second coming in any way, shape, or form, but he seems to be a little bit of a better match in terms of like being closer to Christian McCaffrey than what the 49ers have had to back up Christian McCaffrey over the last year and a half. He's a guy who's good out of the backfield. He's not Christian McCaffrey. He can also be a running back in more traditional sense. But he's just got that. He's just really fast. And it seems like that is the lesson that they've learned from the Lions. We'll just pair the fourth round picks together because I think they are kind of one and the same in a lot of ways. Their next pick was fourth round pick 135, and they picked Jacob Cowing, a wide receiver out of Arizona. And man, oh man, he's just like production out the wazoo at Arizona. 175 receptions for 1,882 yards in 25 games. I did the math. That's something like 7 receptions a game over 25 games, which is just absolutely insane kind of levels of production to keep up. And also 20 touchdowns in 25 games. So that's pretty good. Also has experience as a punt returner as well, which might be something that will earn him, allow him to make the team. You mentioned last podcast something about Trent Taylor being a camp body, and both Jeremy and I were like, "Well, no, I think that's a little harsh." Akshaz, I'm here to apologize to you for that because it seems like you might be right about that. I'm just saying it feels like Trent Taylor has the highest of hills to climb to make this roster, given what just happened in the draft. I think if not for that, it might have been a little bit easier, but he's going to have to be really impressive this during training camp to make this team. But these are two very interesting players. Very, you know, not Cowing's not a particular big guy. I misspoke earlier. I think Guarnardo is a bigger guy. He's like 6 feet, 220 pounds or something like that, but still pretty fast. Cowing is just like speed, 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 not big at all. Like 5'8", 160 pounds or 65 pounds or something like that, but just really, really fast and very good with the ball in his hands. And could be a very interesting, if deployed well, an interesting use. But again, maybe he's one for the future. Maybe they both are. I don't know.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You know, I think Guarnardo, first of all, I definitely butchered that name, and I feel bad because everyone, my name also gets butchered. But I wonder if he gets imbued with the fifth round magic because the Niners traded both their fifth round picks for him.
That's true. He is the honorary fifth round pick.
All jokes aside, I completely agree. I mean, the Niners need speed on their roster. That's probably the one weakness they have, just as a whole, is there's not a lot of top-line speed. And they added a bunch with Cowing, Rendell, and I think McGrenna is going to be interesting because as a running back with big speed, he fits a lot for the kind of return game that the NFL is trying to set up, especially with kickoffs. So I could see him really making a factor there. I could see him getting pretty involved. It's a change of pace for McCaffrey. You get this like shifty, explosive athlete, and then boom, you get a guy that'll run by you like that. So, you know, I'm not a huge fan of drafting running backs in the fourth round, especially when you have the best running back in the NFL on your roster at a very reasonable and pretty like high salary. But again, you know, Elijah Mitchell, I don't see coming back to the Niners after this year. So this is a guy to get behind McCaffrey and see if he has something there. Not against the pick, especially in later rounds, getting to day three. I'm all about drafting traits. Draft something that you think will play on Sundays. And speed is a huge one. And on that note, Jacob Cowing, I write an article after every draft. It's the quote-unquote unsung hero that I think will emerge from the draft class. I did it my first year I wrote it. I chose Elijah Mitchell, and that was the year he almost broke 1,000 yards on the season. So I've now been emboldened to think I can predict the success of the 49ers rookies. And I think Cowan fits that role to a T for this team because you want a guy who's not like super well hyped heading in, but like fills a specific role and can do it really well in a way that helps a team. That was a couple of plays, really like one play away from winning a Super Bowl. And I think Cowan does that. The Niners have tried to get someone fast to fit in this offense. They've tried again and again. But Danny Gray, you know, didn't work out. Ray McLeod did not have that top-end speed they were looking for. I think Cowan is going to get onto the field as a rookie, which for 49ers wide receivers is a big deal, especially if you're not a first-round draft pick. I think he's going to get shot plays designed for him, and I think he's going to produce. Like, Brock Purdy's willing to throw the ball deep, and that makes all the difference for a player. So I can definitely see him getting involved. His size is a big issue. Like, there's no two ways about it. That's going to negate his play sometimes against these bigger physical athletic freaks at corner, but he's a guy who I can definitely see making an impact for this team this year, as well as years future.
Yeah, I think you're right, exactly right about Guarnardo with the kickoffs. The way that they're making the rule change, the conversation is like you need running back vision to make that work, rather than like kickoff returns. All was always just like put the fastest guy out there, let him catch the ball and just run. But with the amount of time that you're gonna have before the, like, you're going to be able to catch the ball, take a look, like, okay, where people come in, where are the lanes going to be opening up? They're going to be like running plays on the kickoffs and everything. It's going to be really bizarre. But I think there's going to be opportunities for creativity, and a guy like that who has both the speed and the vision of a running back is going to be an interesting type of player to kind of put out there. But yeah, I think Jacob Cowing is going to be kind of fun to see. He could be like, even if it's just like he returns punts and then he's like a gadget guy, so he steps into the Ray McCloud kind of role, but maybe with a little bit more firepower there. All right, two more draft picks, and then we'll talk briefly about the undrafted guys. Sixth round, as we mentioned, no fifth round picks. That's where the juice is made, man. I don't understand how they gave up their fifth round picks. This is like tear inducing. But maybe it'll work out, as we said, for Isaac Guerrero, and he'll be the fifth round pick essentially. Jarrett Kingston was their sixth round pick, pick 215. He is an offensive lineman out of USC, the one in Southern California, not the one close to me. He did go to Washington State before transferring to USC in 2018. He was there until 2022. He appeared in 12 games during his time at USC in 2023. And recorded, for some reason, the 49ers.com a little blurb here mentions that he recovered one fumble, which I think is a fun little statistic. So interesting player in that he seems to be another kind of tweener guy. Like, he played some tackle, but he projects, it seems like, as a guard. But he also, there is concerns, apparently. He's 6'4", 306 pounds, which is pretty big, tall, particularly for a guard. I know there was conversations a long time ago, like when Alex Boone was here, about how big he was, like just height wise, and how that can be a little problematic for guards. Like, that's great for tackles, but guards having to get down low and all that kind of stuff. So this will be another tweener guy. I would imagine somebody that, especially from a sixth round pick, somebody that the 49ers will hope will be able to like sneak onto the practice squad eventually. And like be able to refine his technique over the course of the next couple of seasons. But I don't know that he is 100% a one for the future, because I don't anticipate that he's going to be a guy that's going to be like, all right, he's on the roster, like, let's go. Usually guys when you're drafting this late in the draft are not those type of players for sure.
Yeah. I mean, I wrote our site's little write-up about him, the in-detail description, and I completely agree with what you said. Kingston's biggest thing is that he has the size of a tackle, but he doesn't really. He's kind of a little bit in between there as well, but he doesn't have the skill set for a tackle at all. Like, he's not really great on the outside, isn't fantastic dealing with athletic rushers who can get the kind of twitch in them that basically defines elite-level edge rushers. The biggest thing I think for him is one thing Lance Zierlein of NFL.com said in his scouting report is, if Kingston could snap the ball and transition to being a center, he has a real path to starting ability in the NFL, because he then can utilize his speed and ability there in a position that requires probably the least when it comes to pure blocking responsibilities. But for all that said, he's uber athletic, which is why I think the 49ers were interested in him. He's absolutely phenomenal against space. He can make all the reach blocks, the second level blocks that you want out of a guard in this system. And he does have, quote unquote, flexibility in positions. He can play outside, worst case, but he's like almost certainly going to be a guard, maybe a center. And yeah, I mean, in the sixth round, like you mentioned, I don't think you're expecting him to do anything more than really put out a good showing in camp. You know, there's a guy on the roster that you and I, but especially you, don't necessarily believe should be on the roster at offensive guard, in Mr. Nick Zekelich, who seems like a phenomenal guy, by the way. Nothing against Nick. But, you know, like, if that's what this is, to build up the depth at that position, you can't go wrong with guy like Kingston, who clearly has the athletic traits to get at a certain level, but his height's an issue because he really struggles with pad level. And on top of that, he needs more time. But It's not a bad pick in the sixth round, I'd say.
Yeah. Nick Sakel also probably looking for a roommate now because his roommate got married. So bummer for him. But he's another one of those guys like Sakel and like this long list of like, oh, this guy's played tackle in college. I already played tackle. Oh, some like lower level Division One or Division or higher level Division Two school. Okay, cool. So he's gonna play guard? Yeah, probably. It's like okay, but nonetheless. All right, on to the last pick of the draft. 49ers selected with the 251st overall pick in the seventh round. Linebacker Tatum Bethune, another Florida State guy. So they took three players out of Florida. Including two Florida State defenders, which is interesting. And then Ricky Pearsall went to Florida. Speaking of smaller guys, Bethune measured in at just 5 feet, 11 and a half inches. So just a hair under 6 feet, just 229 pounds. He's almost like safety size at that height and weight. Not a particularly big guy. Pretty interesting player in terms of like, he's just kind of, he goes and he plays with a lot of aggression and goes after, you know, after the ball. He seems pretty smart and that sort of thing. But I don't know. I think the size is going to be a real problem. It's going to be really hard to be like a consistent tackler and that sort of thing without really high level, without really high level commitment to the quality of his tackles. He's gonna have to pay really close attention. Again, I think this is a one for later type of situation. You try to get him on the practice squad. Maybe he's one of those guys like a Demetrius Flanagan Fowles who transitioned. He was a safety and transitioned to linebacker. Maybe this is a reverse type of situation where they find him something else to do. I don't know what his pass defense skills are like, but maybe there's something there. But he's certainly not somebody who seems to factor in to this year's plan, mostly because the linebacker room is just like stock full right now. Obviously you got Fred Warner, Dre Greenlaw, who's probably going to miss a quarter, maybe half of the season. They got Devondre Campbell, who they signed in the off season. They got the two D Winters and Jalen Graham that they drafted last year. The aforementioned Demetrius Flanagan Fowles is back. It's a very, very, like, it's a pretty heavy, and full linebacker room at this particular point. So he would have to be really impressive and show out a lot to make this team, mostly because with Greenlaw probably missing a good chunk of the season, whoever it is that makes this team is like the fourth linebacker or the fifth. It'll probably be like a fifth linebacker. Then they'll have to put Greenlaw on IR or whatever they choose to do. It's going to have to be somebody who's going to be really able to contribute beyond just special teams, obviously special teams for sure, but he's going to be really close to potentially being in that starting lineup. I think you can pretty much lock in Campbell as the guy who's going to slide in next to Warner to start the year, but there's going to be somebody else there. And, you know, obviously the 49ers hope that it's Jalen Graham or D Winters, one of those two from last year. But as far as Tatum Bethune is concerned, I think he's going to have opportunities to grow, but it's probably not to be as a practice squad player for 2024.
Yeah. I mean, you hit the nail right on the head, Robert. The 49ers are so good at linebacker. And on top of that, they draft linebacker, I think, better than anyone in the NFL. You know, there's always like positions that some teams just have that. I mean, the Ravens are really good at defensive back. The Steelers are fantastic at receiver. You know, the Eagles somehow get really good defensive linemen all the time. Like, the Niners get good linebackers anywhere in the draft. And Bethune, I think, is I've used this phrase a lot, but he's a gamer. Like, he's going to give you 120% on every play, which is something you always want out of a player. He's aggressive, he's feisty, and he's really instinctive, which is a big deal because, as you mentioned, he's not very big, so he can't make up mistakes. He needs to be right. The problem is he's not right enough to really justify the decisions he makes. He can get caught as a linebacker. So he screams special teams player to me, and he could be a very good one. But like you mentioned, I just don't see the 49ers having space to carry a special teams linebacker anymore. No, I think that's I think you're right that they want one of Jalen Graham or D. Winters to grab the third linebacker spot, and I think that they want the other one to grab the fourth linebacker spot.
Right. Yeah. You know?
So they're not gonna like maybe if he really really excels in training camp, which you know that's the caveat with all the players we're talking about. If they like sure. play better than like we think they'll play, then yeah, obviously, but. You know, if we were doing this after Brock Purdy got drafted, I don't think we're talking about like,
absolutely.
You know,
yeah, 100%.
I just think for him, like, opportunity is going to be the hardest part, but I have the feeling that he's going to be a guy who you're going to want to put on this roster. I just don't see how you could fit in there, but. Given the way he plays, I certainly think he'll make it difficult for the Niners, and that's the best you can do as a second round pick. Just make it hard for the team to cut you.
Yeah. So that the Niners have eight linebackers on their roster right now, not including Bethune, and including Dre Greenlaw. I didn't mention Ezekiel Turner, who's another veteran that they signed over the offseason that could factor in. Interestingly enough, Bethune, I said 5'11 to whatever. D. Winters listed at 5'11 227, so something to that maybe. But Jalen Graham, 6'3 220. Goodness gracious, he's Fred Warner size. That's incredible. Good for him. But anyway, all right. So one last thing to talk about before we get into the undrafted guys. So I think we. How many? So we got eight draft picks. What do we think? Is it four guys? Is it five guys that are going to make this team? Would you expect? What would you anticipate? I think we can pretty much say Pearsall is making the team, right? I think we can say pretty confidently that Green is going to make the team. I hope that we can say pretty confident that Dominic Pooney is going to make the team. So that's three. Right off the bat, what do we think from the rest of the group is likely beyond that? Would you say who?
Say six, including okay. the guys you mentioned. I'm going to take both fourth round picks. I think they'll make the team, and Grendel's definitely going to make the team, and then I think Cowing's going to make the team because the Niners definitely want speed on their roster, and I think. That's basically, it's him and Danny Gray, and Danny Gray is not in the driver's seat for that position.
No.
I feel like in the weirdest case of, hey, you know, you've been around here longer, so you should have a leg up. I think it's the opposite way. I think he has to prove why the last 2 years of not playing does not, like, immediately cost him a job. But after that, I'm willing to say that I think Kingston... Oh, and Mustafa. Well, okay, then I'll say seven. I completely forgot about Mustafa.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I think, and, for sure.
Because I think Kingston can sneak in over Zekelidze. I just think, like, the traits are really good, and Nick's played well, but I just, that's like a place where, you know, tomorrow I could probably message you, like, right after and say, actually, you know, I think Zekelidze might get back there. So, I'll go seven, but which is a lot. As I say it out loud, when I thought they'd draft five, but I don't know. Like, it's a weird situation because I wouldn't necessarily argue that some of the guys I'm mentioning, quote unquote, like, deserve to be on the roster as much as it's just, you know, you get a fourth round pick on a player, it's going to be very hard to cut them. Into their rookie training camp. So the Niners loaded up in the middle rounds quite a bit, which is not what I thought they would do. I thought they would get very aggressive early on. But they have three or four guys in the type of like area where you're not really going to cut them, even if they don't play particularly well. But they only, I'd say, get like the 1 year to show you what they can do. Then next year, they're on the block.
Yeah. I 100% agree. I think six is the number for me. If I had to say, I think it's just the first six guys, and then Kingston and Bethune likely have to find their way back on the practice squad. But again, a lot of time to see how that goes. So, all right. So let's take a look. Again, we do not have anything official on this. This is just a lot of reporting. Most of it's reporting from different guys and from like Jeremy Fowler is reporting on a couple of these from ESPN, Mike Garofalo from the NFL Network. We have a couple from players that have announced themselves as having been signed, but this is what we anticipate. And we'll hopefully by the time you're listening to this, we'll have a more conclusive list, and that we'll be able to get into more on the site. But this is what we anticipate to be the group of undrafted free agents for the 49ers. There are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 of them, which, as if we're counting correctly, I believe brings the 49ers roster up to 90 players, which is where they need to be to start the beginning of the year. So that's good. All right. So we have we're not going to go through each of these guys. We're just going to talk about it in general. And if there's any name that stands out to us. So we have, running back Cody Schrader out of Missouri. Quarterback Tanner Mordecai out of Wisconsin, center Drake Nugent out of Michigan, wide receiver Tariq Owens out of Missouri State, offensive lineman Brazen Mays from Southern Mississippi. He's one of the guys that's self-reporting as having signed there, so good for him. Tight end Mason Plein from Furman, defensive tackle Evan Anderson from Florida Athletic. Another self-report, he posted a video of himself diving into a pool after he found out that he was signed by the 49ers. Very interesting guy there, massive human being, and he just flipped into the pool. It was pretty impressive. Defensive back Jalen Mahoney from Vanderbilt, and then defensive back Ryan Poole out of William & Mary. So again, 9 guys there. Interesting things. The one that immediately, of course, catches your eye is Tariq Owens. We had this long conversation about the legacy players, and Luke McCaffrey goes to the Commanders and was drafted by the Commanders, I think, in the 3rd round. Brendan Rice went to the Chargers in the 7th round. He seems pretty upset about it, having had to wait until the 7th round for that. But cool that he gets to go play with Jim Harbaugh. That'll be nice. Hope that works out for him. The other two, Frank Gore Jr. was an undrafted free agent. He went to Buffalo, I believe. And then Tariq Owens, the son of Terrell Owens, joins the 49ers as part of their undrafted free agent group. I think he has almost zero chance of making this roster, given how loaded the wide receiver room is now. They drafted 2 guys. I think it would be kind of bad if there was a place for Tariq Owens on this roster. Because I think there's really only one wide receiver spot left, right? Potentially, maybe. So that'd be very interesting. But outside of that, any names that jump out at you, Akshaz, that you're just oh, well, this is interesting. I wonder if this guy has a chance to maybe be... Because every once in a while, it seems like pretty consistently since Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch have been here, they've had guys from the undrafted list that seem to crack the list. Crack the team and make it and be really important parts. You go back Azeez Al-Shaair. I think Jordan Mason was also on this list as a guy that cracked the team as an undrafted free agent. It's just they're not shy about, as you mentioned, way at the beginning, who cares? You're here. If you're a player, you can make the team even if we didn't draft you. So any names that stand out to you here?
There's 3 beyond Owens that I think are worth thinking about it a little more. First is Evan Anderson, because he got reportedly a massive bonus, $280,000 signing bonus for an undrafted free agent. That screams practice squad or active roster. Mm-hmm. So I think he has a real shot to get into the mix of defensive tackle. The 49ers did a revamp of that position, so there's a lot of fear of game out there. Tanner Mordecai, the quarterback, it's just, every time a quarterback joins the roster in any way, I think it's worth mentioning. After Mr. Irrelevant, this is doubly true. And I subscribe to the Bill Walsh theory of you should always draft a quarterback, or you should always add a quarterback, because of precisely what happened with Brock Purdy. It's spelled out for you right there. Worst case, you cut the guy, feels bad, you move on. Best case, you get Brock Purdy, or you get Tom Brady, or you get Tony Romo, or, you know, any host of late round quarterbacks who've been absolutely exceptional. Middle case, you get like, you know, a competent backup third string, which is definitely helpful. So I mean, I don't think Mordecai will make this roster. I don't think he'll make the practice squad, but at the worst, you get another guy who can throw the ball, take, you know, some of the mileage off Purdy's arm in the camp. And then the final guy I'm interested in is Drake Nugent, starting center for Michigan's national championship team. And Michigan really coaches up their offensive line. So he's a talented player. He's a bit undersized at center, which is a big deal for most teams. But I do think the 49ers are one of those few teams where, you know, smaller interior offensive linemen are not the end-all be-all. So it'll be difficult, especially with Kingston and Pooney joining what is already a pretty static offensive line group. And with Brendel locked in for a pretty long contract, Feliciano back for one more year, I don't know how much leeway there is there, but I certainly think the Niners will be more than happy to see a guy like Nugent really grab it by the horns. Because, you know, Jake Brendel's played quite well, Pro Bowl alternate a couple of years. But if you can get better, that's one of those positions that you're looking to get better at. I think beyond Trent Williams and Aaron Banks, the 49ers are not content.
Yeah, they're not locked into any of those other three guys necessarily.
Exactly. Yep.
I mean, Brendel more than the other two, I think, just because his contract is a little longer than the other two. But yeah, certainly for sure. Yeah, the Evan Anderson one is interesting. A little bit, you know, maybe a little DJ Jones vibe. Obviously, DJ Jones was the seventh round draft pick, but to be, you know, honestly, there's not, what's the difference between a seventh round draft pick and an undrafted free agent? It's not that significant in terms of certain things, but the money certainly speaks. Now, it doesn't always work out. I think they gave a pretty big contract to it to a wide receiver last year, and it didn't end up working out. So you never know. Tanner Mordecai is certainly interesting, but as you mentioned, it's going to be difficult for him to make this team. And the other thing to keep in mind is that they changed the rules. Remember, the emergency quarterback rule was, in order for the guy to be your emergency quarterback, he had to be on the 53 man roster. That's not the case anymore. Your emergency quarterback can be your practice squad quarterback. So whoever stays on as the practice squad quarterback, be it Josh Dobbs, be it Brandon Allen, or could be Tanner Mordecai for all we know, like, he's going to be the emergency quarterback on game days, which is great because it saves him a roster spot. But it also means that that guy becomes a little bit more important than just like the guy who gets to pretend to be, you know, whoever the opposing quarterback is for the team that week. So it's a little bit of a different role moving forward. Two names that stand out to me that are interesting. First is Cody Schrader. Apparently was the SEC's leading rusher. He is like he's like major production guy, but doesn't have like the height, weight, speed to match it. So he's one of those guys, like, you just see what he can do, like, get him in there. Maybe he's that undrafted guy like the Jordan Mason or other guys that they've had in that position before. The running back seems to be the place where they seem to find these late round draft picks like Elijah Mitchell or these undrafted guys like Jordan Mason, who you're just like, oh, he's pretty good. He's on the team now. And it's like, okay. So very interesting. The third one that is interesting to me, mostly because the dearth of options here, is Mason Plein, the tight end out of Furman. Not a lot of football experience. He played 3 years of basketball at like a lower level college for the first part of his career, and then he transferred to Furman and started playing football. So he hasn't played high level football for very long. And you could make the argument that Furman is probably not like the highest level of competition, right? But still, very good athlete. Obviously has skills from basketball that would be interesting to see how they would translate. And Akshaz, frankly, if there is a position on this team that you look at and you go, what in the world are they going to do? It is tight end after George Kittle. It is just like an empty, like, who knows? So maybe a guy like Mason Plein goes, all right, well, the rest of you guys, I'm coming in here. Here I am. You're making me tight end too. And that's just the way it's going to be. Obviously, with a guy who doesn't have that much experience, you're worried about like how good of a blocker can he be, which is pretty important for a tight end. But like maybe as an athlete and as like a receiver, there's something there. And so those are a couple of names that stand out to me.
Yeah, I think Klein is really interesting for that exact reason. You know, I so I had one hit on the draft picks who could really help out in Mitchell. And I had one quote unquote miss, I'd call it. I thought Braydon Willis was going to be huge this upcoming year, and he didn't really get on the field. But, you know, you're right. It's a lot of who knows or what ifs. You know, Cam Lotu got hurt, but before he got hurt, he was not playing very well at all. Charlie Werner's gone. I think Ross Dwelly's also gone, if I am not mistaken.
Yeah. Yes. Like, that's a lot of. He's just unsigned as of this point. He could come back if he wanted to, I suppose.
That's a lot of experience, but also a lot of, like, not mediocrity. That's not the right word, but a lot of, like, unexplosiveness, I'd say. Werner really just blocked. I think the 49ers had attempted to make him something into a receiving threat, and it just never materialized. He had a couple of injuries that took away a lot of whatever forward momentum he was making. So I agree, you know, there's all sorts of like success stories of former basketball players being really good NFL tight ends. They get that vertical, they get that like idea of how to use their bodies in space to get open and create, you know, availability for passes. And that's a position where for sure, there's like all sorts of competition, but that's equal opportunity competition. No one except George Kittle is guaranteed a spot. We just talked about how, you know, some of these mid-round draft picks, you get 1 year and then boom, it's time to prove it. I think Cam Latu is already in that boat. He had one kind of like redshirt year and then that's it. Now you got to show us you can do something. Otherwise, it'll be over. So really interested to see how Klein works out.
Yeah. I mean, the knock on him seems to be that he hasn't quite figured out how to use the athleticism that he has and the skills that he's developed as a basketball player and how to translate them into onto the football field. And so maybe there's an opportunity for him. Maybe if he doesn't make this team, he's the kind of guy that you look at and you go, OK, well, we can keep him around on the practice squad. If you know, especially if a couple of those other guys, Cram and Latu, Braydon Willis, they did sign Eric Schubert, I believe is his name, in the offseason as a veteran option. Ross Dwelly is still out there. Again, very underwhelming, I think, at this particular point. So maybe something there. I don't necessarily think like, oh, he's going to just come in here and just blow it out of the water, but he can certainly make a name for himself and get an opportunity to stick around on the practice squad and see what he could do. So, all right, Akshaz, any final thoughts on this draft class in general before we wrap it up? This has been a little bit of a longer episode, but I think a good conversation for the most part.
You know, it's an interesting class because it's like we mentioned at the beginning, this is a very future-focused draft. We talked about a lot of guys who are not going to have the biggest 2024 impact, but might get really involved in 2025. The receivers, for sure. Robert Green as well. Basically, every pick, I'd say, does not have a real like eye for a starting spot in 2024. And it's interesting because the 49ers are, like, the thing about football that makes it super fun is that anyone can win the Super Bowl because, especially when you get to the playoffs, you just need one game to go your way. That's the beauty of the way the sport works is you could beat a team 10 times out of 11, but if the Super Bowl was that 11th time, boom, you lose. And I think the Niners are in that situation right now where they kind of got a lot of those, like, quote-unquote anomaly-type games from where, you know, other teams really had a shot at them, where normally they really played well and they'd win. But it's been like that for the last 5 years or so. It's been a lot of, you know, this is one of the best rosters in the NFL. If they put it all together, they should win the Super Bowl. And then for whatever reason, they don't put it together. So I think one way to look at it, and I certainly looked at it as, get into this draft, get yourself a right tackle, get yourself a corner that can start opposite Mooney Ward. And, you know, the rest of it, almost who cares?
Like, if you want to get yourself in a, like, a real speedy receiver too, that's a good get. But other than that, walk out of here with those two players, and you have a great chance of winning the Super Bowl next year. And the Niners didn't do that. I don't think they got either of those guys. But I don't think they're any more or less likely to win the Super Bowl because of this draft. You know, a lot of teams got better, but everyone thinks teams get better in the draft. That's the way it works. And then you play the games and you remember, oh, wait, you know, some of these vets in the NFL, they've been around for a reason. It's a lot of talent still on the 49ers roster. But it's interesting because, like we've said and we'll continue to say, you know, last year we talked a lot about the season's all about proving that you can win a Super Bowl. This year the messaging is way more extreme. It's win the Super Bowl. This is the only team in the NFL that I think has an other than like the Cowboys, who are in this perpetual state of all or nothing, but also just nothing.
Hey, Zeke Elliott's back, man. I don't know what you're talking about.
Like, the Niners need to win the Super Bowl. If they don't win the Super Bowl, this goes up there along with like the Buffalo Bills in the 90s. Not to that level, but on that same relic, like same playing field of like futility in the playoffs, that undermines what has been one of the most productive and dominant stretches in franchise history. But without the ring at the end, you just become like the footnote to the story of Patrick Mahomes is like GOAT, greatest player of all time message. It's like his familiar foe who he had always beaten in the playoffs, the San Francisco 49ers. Like, that's what you become. And, you know, that's definitely not the legacy I think the 49ers want to leave behind. So I say all this stuff because, A, for those of you who listen to this podcast enough, you know this is just how my brain works. I'm sorry. But you listen to it, so you know what I'm about. But on top of that, like, it's a fascinating draft because the Niners' current roster really needs to prove that the front office made the right approach, that they didn't really, you know, throw caution to the wind and say, we're going to get ourselves those two or three guys who absolutely make this roster better right now. Yep. The Niners doubled down on their existing roster, and now it's up to the existing roster to prove them right.
Yeah, I think well said. As always, look at you. You're just the best at doing that. So kudos to you, as always. All right. Well, with that, I think it's time to say, as I always do, thanks for listening to this episode of the Niner Noise Podcast, part of the Fansided Podcast Network. Please continue to check out ninernoise.com for all your latest 49ers news and analysis as we react to the draft and all the rest of those things. And be sure to rate and subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen. And be sure to share it with all your fellow 49er fan friends. So until next time, let's sound the horn, 49ers.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.